Excellent. Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so grateful, as always, to be here with all of you. Let's begin our time together by coming into a brief period of quiet. Maybe this is the first time, first moment today that you have really slowed down and paused and closed your eyes. Maybe your body and your mind have been waiting for this moment. Just feeling, sensing what it feels like to just be still. And turning awareness to our hearts. And recognizing what's in our hearts. We all want the same thing. We all want to know peace and love and joy and happiness. And we are willing to recognize that these things come from within. They come from our connection to God. Anything out there in the world might seem like it brings these things, but in some ways, it's a substitute for that direct connection. But we find this direct connection through loving each other, through being miracle workers, and seeing the light and the love in all of our brothers and sisters. And thus, we recognize it in ourselves. Offering our willingness to experience miracles and love and joy and peace. Offering this willingness to Holy Spirit. Knowing that anytime we offer anything to Spirit, it's always an exchange. We offer up whatever it is that we offer up and we get back an experience, a miracle. Maybe it doesn't show up right away, but it is done. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind. These are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All righty. So welcome everybody who is with us here on Zoom and our extended family in our Facebook group. We are reading cameo number 12 tonight, which is defenses are now being used much better. I say we dive right in. All right, page 1755 in the CE edition, cameo 12, defenses are now being used much better. Here we go. After two sections on defenses, which is in chapter 2, the reinterpretation of defenses, and also the atonement as defense, Helen wrote down personal thoughts and guidance related to her own use of defenses, specifically her defense of truth rather than error. She begins with her talking about feelings of depression and abandonment. She is able to partly get past these by hearing Jesus say, "I will never leave you or forsake you." So Helen writes, "Last night I felt briefly but intensely depressed, temporarily under the impression that I was abandoned. I tried, but couldn't get through at all. After a while, I decided to give up for the time being. And he said, this is from the urtext, don't worry. I will never leave you or forsake you. I did feel a little better. And then in the urtext, it says, and decided I was not really sick. And so I could return to my exercises. And then while I was exercising, I had some part vision experiences, which I found only mildly frightening at times and quite reassuring at others. This exchange is actually very similar to one she reported in the very first pages of her notebooks 2 days before the course began coming through. So Helen writes, I was really quite depressed this morning, which is now very unusual. I used to be all the time. But he says, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. In both cases, then, she is feeling down. And Jesus responds with a Bible quote that offers his own presence as the antidote to her depression. Now, Helen reports the part vision experiences that she mentions above. Helen writes, I'm not too sure of the sequence, but it began with a very clear assurance of love and an equally clear emphasis on my own great value, beauty, and purity. Things got a little confusing after that. First, the idea of Bride of Christ occurred to me with vaguely inappropriate, probably sexual, undertones. Then there was a repetition of the wave of love and a restatement of an earlier experience, now as if it were from him to me, and in quotes, behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it done unto you according to his word. So in parentheses, it says, this threw me into a panic before. But at that time, it was stated in the more accurate biblical phrasing, be it done unto me according to his word. This time I was a bit uneasy, but I remembered I had misperceived it last time and probably was still not seeing it right. Actually, it is really just a statement of allegiance to the divine service, which can hardly be dangerous. I want to read that one more time. Actually, it is just a statement of allegiance to the divine service, which can hardly be dangerous. So the commentary continues now. The earlier experience was one we see in Cameo 8. In that experience, she inwardly heard the same line from the Gospel of Luke that she reports above. Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it done to me according to thy will. In the earlier instance, however, she apparently interpreted this as signaling that she would physically give birth to the infant Christ, an idea which made her panic and which Jesus bluntly called egocentric. This time when she hears it, though, she responds better. Rather than panicking, she is merely a bit uneasy. She remembers she had seen it wrong last time, and realizes the same thing is probably happening now. This then apparently allows her to receive what it really means. Actually, this is in quotes, actually, it is really just a statement of allegiance to the divine service, which can hardly be dangerous. She had obviously learned from her past mistake, from her previous mistake, and the result was that the intended message was able, at least to some extent, to get through. We can gather the essence of this message by looking at the two times she heard the handmaid of the Lord quote. The first time, Jesus began by praising her as holy, lovely, a perfect shaft of pure light. I'm sure we all remember that from that last cameo, in Cameo 8, I think. He then told her, blessed are you with Mary as the mother of the children. And then she heard, behold the handmaid of the Lord. The second time he began by assuring her of her great value, beauty, and purity. Then there was a repetition of the wave of love, which may refer to the waves and waves of love she felt coming to her from God in her subway experience in 1938. I can mention that what that is later if we aren't familiar. And then she again heard, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord." So the two experiences are remarkably similar. In both, he's clearly trying to get across to her a message of how beautiful and pure she really is, how deeply loved she is, and how holy her role is as the mother of this new birthing of Jesus's teaching. For the first time, the magnitude of what was being said about her was too much to handle, and she diverted the message into something her ego could own. Jesus, however, doesn't give up. This message is too important to go unreceived. And when he does repeat it, she is able to avoid her earlier mistake and to let at least some of the message through without distortion. Her impulse to distort the love and affirmation that Jesus is giving her, however, is still present as the following sequence shows. So Helen writes, "Then there was a strange sequence in which Christ seemed to be making very obvious advances, which became quite sexual in my perception of them. I almost thought briefly that he turned into a devil. I got just a little scared, and the possession idea came in for a while, the idea of being possessed by an evil spirit, but I thought this is so silly that there is no point in taking it seriously. As I am writing this, I am remembering that the thing in the book about the demon lover, which once threw me, note the spelling, into a fit, threw me into a fit. I am upset, but the spelling slip is reassuring." And if you read the footnote here, I'll just pause for a moment. It says, above the word through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, she then wrote the letters E-W, indicating through, T-H-R-E-W. So she's remembering that this previously threw her into a fit, but now it's going through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, through her, like she's not hanging on to it. So Helen has an inner vision in which Jesus appears to be a demon threatening to possess her, but then she realizes this is so silly, she needn't take it seriously. She is a little upset, but then is reassured by a Freudian slip. She spelled through, T-H-R-E-W, as through, T-H-R-O-U-G-H, perhaps indicating that what before had really thrown her was now just passing right through her. So Helen writes again, I promise I'll pause in just a minute. Helen writes again, "This morning we reviewed the whole episode. He said he was very pleased at the comparative lack of fear and also the concomitant awareness that it was a misperception. This showed much greater strength and a much increased right-mindedness. This is because defenses are now being used much better on behalf of truth more than error, though not completely so. The weaker use of misprojection is shown by my recognition that it can't really be that way, which became possible as soon as denial was applied against error, not truth. This permitted a much greater awareness of alternative interpretations. It was also explained, the shift to the passive form instead of, okay, this is in parentheses. So she wrote, it was also explained, and then in parentheses, the shift to the passive form instead of, quote, he also explained, should be noted, this is an expression of fear, end of parenthesis. Remember the section in Brotherhood you read last evening about hold fast and please do so. All right, I'll pause there. We'll keep reading in just a moment. There's actually not much more to read. And by the way, what I just read about Brotherhood, if you look at the footnote here, for those of you who have the book, it's referencing Letters of the Scattered Brotherhood, which is a spiritual book that Helen was reading at the time. So let's unpack this for a little bit. So it starts out with Helen saying that last night she felt briefly but intensely depressed, feeling like she was abandoned. And Jesus says something to the effect of, be of good cheer. That wasn't it. He basically reassured, here it is. I will never leave you or forsake you. Helen then talks about this phrase, behold the handmaid of the Lord, Helen remembers that the first time she heard that, she misinterpreted it, and she was probably still not seeing it right. So she's questioning her own perception, which is a good thing. And then she has this strange experience in which she feels that there are these sexual undertones or overtones that Jesus is making toward her. And she gets this fearful idea that he's become a devil and she's getting possessed. She recognizes immediately that this is silly, so silly, she doesn't need to take it seriously. And then she gets the message that this is showing her greater strength and a much increased right-mindedness, because now she's using defenses on behalf of truth rather than error, though not completely so. But essentially what she did was recognize that she was in the first example with the behold the handmaid of the Lord, recognizing that she didn't get it right the first time, and so probably isn't understanding it again, rather than immediately spinning off into her own, you know, misperceptions or thoughts about it. And then this sort of fearful vision about being possessed, recognizing that she wrote, "I thought this is so silly that there is no point in taking it seriously." So there she is witnessing this fearful thought, this fearful, you know, experience that she was having, and saying, you know what, this is so silly, there's no point in taking it seriously. How often do we as people spin off, you know, into something ego, and we do take it seriously, we take it very seriously, and where does that, you know, get us, but typically in the ego basement and needing to kind of work ourselves out of something again. Here, she recognizes in the moment that something is not right and really says, this is so silly, there's no point in taking it seriously. And so is able to not add more fear or more energy into that. So she's applying denial against error, not the truth. She's not defending she's not trying to keep truth out of awareness. She's defending, protecting truth by rejecting those fearful interpretations and experiences. Now, I do have an example that I can relate to this, but before I do that, does anybody have any comments or questions so far with what we've read or what's coming up for you? Oh, I just saw Deidre. Hi, Deidre. Anything coming up for anyone?
Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Nikki.
I don't know if this is appropriate for the reading, but just the first sentence kind of struck me. Yesterday, I had a bit of a disappointment. I was looking forward to something that was very important to me, and there was a couple mishaps, and the event couldn't go through. And it was a very personal event, something for my wellness, and I had been waiting for weeks for this. Mm-hmm. And I was so bummed and hurt, and I was asking God last night and Holy Spirit, like, what would you have me say? Show me, help me. I didn't expect answers immediately, but I was asking the same question Helen was asking. I was like, I feel so abandoned down here. What, you know, God, what are you wanting me to do? Holy Spirit, what are you wanting me to do? So when you read that first line, I was like, yes, Helen, I feel you. So it's pretty, I don't know. I don't know what I'm looking for when I shared, but maybe help.
Well, Nikki, it's so funny that you say that, because this is like pretty much along the exact same lines of the example that I was going to share. So I'll share my example and we'll work our way through it together, and I can share what helped me from reading this cameo. So this just happened today, which cracks me up, because, you know, here we are reading this cameo and it directly applies to what just unfolded for me today. So, you know, with the pandemic, with being really busy, I don't often get to see and get together with friends, especially because of the pandemic nowadays. And a lot of my friends are also, they have their own lives, they have children, really super busy. So I've been very, very fortunate and blessed that I have a friend who lives right around the corner that we've been going on walks in the woods. And yesterday we went on a walk in the woods with, does anybody know what crampons are for the bottom of your shoes? They're kind of like cleats, so you can just walk on ice and snow, like it's no big deal. We were just like, you know, strutting through the woods, just having the best time. Nobody else was there. It was so beautiful. and we were going to do it again today. She ended up having something come up and she couldn't make it. And, you know, I was a little bummed, but totally fine. And then my husband was going to come with me and I could tell he really didn't want to go. Like he was just not into it today. And I was like, he was going to come. And I was like, don't worry about it. Like he was tired and I was like, it's totally fine. And I ended up going by myself. It was beautiful. I had a very enjoyable time, but when I got home, I got really sad that he didn't come with me. I got really sad that like, oh, I had to go alone. Like it was total post after the fact, ego, little downward spiral of just feeling like lonely and I don't get to see anybody anymore because of this pandemic. And, you know, we're all so busy and we all got to slow down and just getting into a little downward ego spiral and feeling temporarily, as it says, quite depressed. This is all within the span of, you know, a short time, which is very unusual for me, and feeling abandoned, really, in a sense of feeling like, you know, lonely and all alone. And I have that experience. I read the cameo and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is describing exactly what just happened with me. And so what is Jesus saying here with this abandonment and feeling intensely depressed? He says, I will never leave you or forsake you. He says to Helen in that other, with the other instance, you are wholly lovely, a perfect shaft of pure light. That it's silly that we could think that we're alone, that we could think that it's possible for us to be lonely. The answer is coming back to recognizing that Jesus is with you. He's closer than your next breath. And being alone or lonely or whatever is actually, it's a feeling that we feel in our human experience, but it's not the truth because we're not alone. So what I gleaned from this cameo, I was like, wait a second. I rule my mind, which I alone must rule. That's a workbook lesson. What is that saying? But this thought is so silly that there's no point in taking it seriously. Like, can I actually, and can we all do this? Because we all have our, you know, stuff that internally we get caught up in. Can we remind ourselves that this thought is so silly that there's no point in taking it seriously? That Jesus is with us. Holy Spirit is in us. We're not aware of it because we got all these, you know, layers of fear going on, but it's impossible to be alone. I was fine on the walk, you know, when I was by myself. It wasn't till afterwards when I just went into like, I was all alone. And this to me is the exact answer, that it's so silly. There's no point in taking it seriously. So that is a proper use of denial. It's a proper use of a defense in saying, in a way, I rule my mind, which I alone must rule. This thought that's hooking me, be it depression, anxiety, fear, whatever form it takes, this thought that's hooking me is so silly that there's no point in taking it seriously, even though, you know how good we are at taking our ego thoughts seriously. And that was the total shift that I needed. So again, I was just kind of chuckling because this happens often when, you know, we're reading something that somebody needs to hear, in that exact moment. So Nikki, does that sound relatable to what you were just saying?
Sort of. It took me to another level when you're saying that. I think then what it showed me is like, okay, get past that part. And what I see underneath that is I've done so much work and I've had so many clearings, but I have so much anger at God and life still. Mm-hmm. And that's what was under that. My, why didn't this work out was really me trying to be very dramatic. Like, look what you've done, God. I'm really pissed and sad now. Fix it, but you're not going to. I have to fix it. So now that just points me, okay, back to forgiveness work.
Yeah. So good for you. Again, the transparency and the self-honesty that you're saying right now is it. It's all about like, you know, what's deeper than this? What's the thought? What's the belief beneath this? And to be able to identify anger at God, that, you know, that upset, that's a big deal. And so that's when we get nice and deep and, you know, beneath the layers of the stuff that's on the surface, that's when we can really start to exhume and uproot those, you know, thought systems. Well, the ego thought system, but the beliefs that are there. And it's all about, again, not fixing it ourselves, but saying, mm-hmm. Holy Spirit, help.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So that's my little personal example of how this cameo essay, because it's not typical for me to feel, you know, like lonely and depressed. And so it was just so funny that that happened. And then, you know, reading about Helen kind of going through this too. And I recognize also that to just say, this is so silly, there's no point in taking it seriously. Believe me, I get that, like, sometimes it feels impossible to do that with, you know, like anxiety or depression or something that's like really sort of taken hold. But there may be moments when we can, when our right-mindedness is strong enough, and it might not be consistent, it might be here and there, but when that right-mindedness is strong enough, that the thought of Jesus saying, I will never, he's being serious when he says this, I will never leave you or forsake you. There was a church in a town that I used to live in, and it's a Bible quote, I think, but there was a stained glass mosaic of Jesus, and it said, like sort of in an arc over him, I am with you always. And I always loved walking by that church because it was just such a nice reminder that that is the truth. I just said a lot. Anybody want to chime in? Comments, questions? Hi, Paula.
I hear you when you're talking about, because I live alone, mm-hmm. and sometimes I don't like it, but I always have wonderful results when I sit down and either write a Dear God letter mm-hmm. or just ask Holy Spirit to snap me out of this, and something will always shift. Mm-hmm. So I think it is truly the answer.
It is. And Paula, that's a beautiful little prayer. Holy Spirit, snap me out of this.
Yeah. Get it off of me.
Help.
Please help. And do it now.
Yeah.
I'm not shy about it. I get very demanding with the Holy Spirit when I'm in a funk. I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are, I hear you, like the ego funks are ego funks. And yes, it's something that we can get snapped out of, and we're sort of getting snapped back to right-mindedness, back to love. So thank you for sharing that, yeah. Because it is, I love that you said that you get wonderful results, because that's it.
I'm sometimes absolutely amazed at the results. Mm-hmm. And with the pandemic being, you know, you do feel isolated sometimes. Mm-hmm. And somehow or the other, I got involved with this artist in California, and I started painting with her, and I'm like, it's just really a wonderful thing, because I don't even remember how I got started with this, but I was led to it, mm-hmm. and it's really helped me get through this period of time. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think it's hard on all of us.
It is. It is.
Because we're really somewhat isolated at times.
It shows us how much we need each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big takeaway that has come from this pandemic situation for me, is just how we need each other, how we need connection, and we need other people, and just how interdependent we are, and how we're not geared for being, you know, totally isolated and cut off from one another.
I spent the day making Christmas cookies, and I'm going to deliver them to my neighbors just to kind of reach out and just to make a connection, because it's just so bizarre not to be, you know, doing Christmas activities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I'm going to make that happen.
That's awesome, Paula. Little cookie miracles. I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dave.
I just wanted to give kudos to Zoom and all of these other online, you know, meeting services that if it wasn't for that, I mean, you know, it's like, okay, it's Sunday evening and I've got 16 people in my living room. And I'm grateful, you know, to have that connection with everybody. So it's, mm-hmm. yeah, I think they really have in a lot of ways saved the day, saved a lot of people's sanity.
I completely agree with you wholeheartedly. Just what a blessing, you know, when using technology for the purposes of the Holy Spirit and joining us together. This, can you imagine if this just didn't exist? I mean, I can't either. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Oh,
thank you.
Corinne, this is Dee.
Hi, Dee.
Hi there. And I want to say how grateful I am for this edition of the Course in Miracles, because before this, I was left, the whole Course in Miracles community was left with the impression that Helen was a declared atheist, as she declared herself. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, to show us that she was reading the Letters of Scattered Brotherhood, a spiritual book, mm-hmm. it totally turned my impression of Helen around.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dee, thank you for that. That's great. Yeah, it really, I love so much this material that's specific for Helen and Bill. And I understand, you know, why it was cut out. For those who, you know, feel like this edition or the earlier, you know, her notes and things were meant for her and were never meant for us, I always go back to the course teaching that chance plays no part in God's plan for salvation, mm-hmm. that we did not need it back then, you know, when the course first came out, but now, you know, it's out because we're ready for it and because we're ready to learn from it and to, you know, have that, that deeper understanding. So thank you, Dee. Mm-hmm. John, were you going to say something? I wasn't sure if you were going to pop in before.
Yeah, kind of. I was just thinking how in Loveland, you know, we got that thing about doing your own little altar and stuff. And so I created a little altar. And it's really been weird for me to accept the Holy Spirit as kind of a she.
The
idea, and I have this little statue that doesn't have a face, but it's kind of like a, kind of like a Mother Mary statue, but it's just in like a cloak and stuff. And it's really non-descriptive in that sense. But I've used that and I have my candles on and stuff too. And it's really been interesting to do that, you know, because I like the idea of having her as the Holy Spirit rather than him, because there's a lot of hymns. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like, mm-hmm. it's not easy to do that, but I really can identify with the sacred female.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, John. You know, I always, just because of the way that the course is written, I've just kind of gone with what the course says and have always referred to the Holy Spirit as he. And I learned several years ago, and I've not confirmed this with anybody that I know who reads the Hebrew edition of A Course in Miracles, but I remember learning from someone that in the Hebrew edition of the course, that it refers to the Holy Spirit as she throughout that edition. And I believe I saw a post, I don't think Paul is on our call tonight, but I saw him make a post. He also studies the Kabbalah, and in Kabbalah, I believe there's, it refers to either the Holy Spirit or something closely related as she also. So that was nice to hear. And it also, like, that switch has been so helpful for me in thinking of the Holy Spirit as she, because it shows us if it at all feels weird to switch from he to she, what is that highlighting? But our perception through a lens of gender, like it to me, it uproots something with he. Shifting to she is exposing something in my mind that is being uprooted to kind of, again, see it fresh and anew. So.
Thank you. Yeah, I do that. And that's definitely what it's done. I mean, even with God, you know, I mean, I refer to him as father and stuff too, but I know that there's no gender there either. So
right.
Jesus, right. I can relate to as a male just because it's Jesus.
Right.
It comes to the Father and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Thank you for that. It's really interesting to hear about the Kabbalah and whatnot.
Right? Mm. I thought so too. Cool. Thanks, John. Ah, Esty says, in Hebrew, Holy Spirit is called Shekinah. I'm not sure how to say that, which is feminine. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Oh, perfect. Thank you, Esty. That's beautiful to know. That makes me happy to hear. Lovely. Anybody else before we finish up our reading? Deidre.
Hi, Deidre. Hi, everyone. I just was thinking, Corinne, as you were talking about the pandemic and feeling kind of isolated and how important it is for us to remember that we are connected. I remember a number of years ago when my dad was in the hospital, quite ill and preparing to transition. And I was sitting at home and I was feeling quite sad, you know, and sort of going through some of the feelings. And I remember thinking at the time that it would really be nice to hear from a particular individual who was in my life at that time, just because they were quite significant in my life and very supportive spiritually. And I just said a prayer to God that if there's any way that I could speak to this person, that my mind is joined with their mind and we could have a connection. And about 20 minutes later, that person called me. And it just reminds me that, you know, we think that we need, you know, like physical space to be connected to one another, but we are connected to one another in our minds first. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I wanted to offer that. I felt like my dad came through me as I was sitting here listening to you and reminded me of that story, because we can't lose the connection. It's always there.
Oh, Deidre, thank you. Thank you so much for that. You know, I have to give you a shout out because I'm not sure if you were on the call before we started recording, but I was sharing with everybody that my sweet Gloria Chicken has crossed over the Rainbow Bridge. It was a really difficult transition because she was killed by a hawk. So it was really not good, but give you a shout out. Thank you. I have to give you a shout out because Deidre was the one when Henrietta had passed, I was having such a difficult time with it. And Deidre, you reminded me that communication remains unbroken as long as you don't see the body as the necessary means of communication. And you prompted me to pick a symbol and ask, you know, Henrietta to show me that symbol. And that's when, you know, I chose ladybugs. As if you've listened to my Henrietta podcast, you all would recognize the story. And that night, Henrietta came to me in a dream and was like, ladybugs, squirrels. And like, she was a sassy little chicken. So she was like, no. Like, you're not picking a ladybug for me. It's squirrels. And then I was seeing, you know, I opened the window that morning and the first thing my eyes laid on was a squirrel. And Deidre highlighted that, you know, do you get the message, Corinne? Like, squirrels are everywhere. So it was just so helpful. So thank you for sharing what you just said now, because that's it. It's our minds. We are connected through our minds. And to think that it's bodies that join, which we learned last week, they don't join, they rub from, I think that, was that Tracy and Mike who put that in the chat? Yeah, yeah. you know, it seems like that's the answer to loneliness here in the world is to have another body. But you're absolutely right, Deidre. It's joining at the level of the mind. And that is where real communication is. And so that's everything. So thank you for that reminder.
You're welcome. Thank you, Corinne.
I have to give you another shout out just in case anybody doesn't know this or needs to know this. Deidre is an incredible counselor and is doing virtual sessions now. So I just.
Oh my God.
I'm going on a tangent here, but Deidre's counseling program was based on A Course in Miracles, which I think is just the coolest thing ever. So I would have gone through that program back in the day if it had existed.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deidre. All right. Shall we finish reading? Let's do that. I marked off, I'm hoping this is accurate. I think we're in the middle of page 1758. Yeah, you can see how much Jesus is trying to reinforce is where we're picking up, I believe. Okay, cool. You can see how much Jesus is trying to reinforce her more healthy response to the demon lover vision. He reviews it with her the next morning and tells her he is very pleased at how she dealt with it. Yes, the picture of him as a possessive demon was her projection, but it was a weak projection, which she could regard with little fear and which she could look in the face and deny as real. This is the very kind of healthy denial that he has been teaching her about. Using it frees her mind from having to take this vision at face value. She realizes there could be alternative interpretations and then embraces one. This is so silly that there is no point in taking it seriously. And I just have to pause here really quick and just add, I'm a big fan. I have lots of movies from like the 1980s and 90s that I love. And one movie that is like one of my all-time favorites is Labyrinth. If you remember, David Bowie was, he was in that. So there's this one part where Sarah, who's the character, like the main character in the film, David Bowie is the Goblin King. And at the very end, she basically looks at him in the face and says, "You have no power over me." And then he disappears. And this is what that reminds me of. Our projections are getting weaker. And so we can regard them with little fear, look them in the face and say, "You have no power over me." Deny them as real. And it says, this is the very kind of healthy denial that Jesus has been teaching her about. Okay, next paragraph. We can see this new use of defenses through the above account. She feels depressed, but then is restored when she lets Jesus reassure her of his presence. She hears a line that before caused her to panic, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord." But now she realizes she must be seeing it incorrectly and can then receive its real meaning. She sees Jesus making sexual advances, but realizes that's too ridiculous to be real. In all three cases, rather than accepting appearances or her feelings as the truth, she is using her mind to question them and to allow a new interpretation to enter. She is using defense mechanisms to defend the truth and thus to defend her right mind. As a result, the fears that in the past would have thrown her are now passing right through her. She is learning that rather than being dragged under by her negative feelings, she can hold fast in face of them. She can defend her right mind rather than defending her insanity. Helen is learning, in other words, exactly what Jesus is trying to teach her and Bill at this point. Her experience then provides reassuring evidence that it can be done. As a postscript, it is interesting to note that Helen mentions she was reading from Letters of the Scattered Brotherhood. This book, which does indeed contain a running theme of holding to the spirit in the face of temptation, is considered a 20th century spiritual classic. Its preface says that it was written by a variety of contributors as an expression of their genuine spiritual experience. The preface states that they wrote it in the endeavor to find, this is from the preface, they wrote it in the endeavor to find words to describe and convey the meaning of meditation and spiritual awareness. Anonymity has been preserved for the reason that with contemporary material of this kind, it has been thought wise to keep the spiritual significance free from personal association. It is worth noting that Helen was in the process of writing a book that, like Letters, flowed from spiritual experience, was destined to become a modern spiritual classic, and downplayed its scribes' identities so as to keep the spiritual significance free from personal association. Helen was originally entirely anonymous in her role as scribe. As she said in a draft of the preface to the FIP edition, the course does not need my identity because it can and should stand on its own. And we just spoke a few minutes ago about how now that we have this material about her, how it was because we were ready for it. We're ready to learn. And Deidre, of course, please post your link in the chat. That would be great. Oh, so, okay. So we just made it through cameo number 12. Yeah, this is just again all about rather than accepting appearances or feelings as the truth, we're using our mind to question them. I think questioning everything is one of the healthiest things that we can do. If you're taking part of the Love Lens, actually, I don't think I've explicitly said this in the episodes. Maybe I did at some point, but it's made me be willing to question what I think I know about the course and starting over with clear eyes and constantly, you know, dropping what I think I know about it and instead allow it to reveal itself to me as I read, you know, with fresh eyes yet again, with a fresh perspective. I think that's all I'm going to say. Andrea.
Partway through, there was a reference to Helen's 1938 subway experience.
Yeah. Do you want me to mention what that was? So, okay, this I love, and I wish, I'm trying to think of where, it might be in her autobiography, so I don't have the actual experience in front of me, but my recollection, and I'm going to leave out details, she was on the subway in 1938 and feeling kind of disgusted by what she was witnessing in the subway. I think... again, this might be me embellishing details, but like this might be me actually superimposing my experiences on a subway over her experience. But she was like, I think somebody was really smelly. I think there was like, I remember somebody telling me, and again, I don't know if this is true, but like maybe there was like a child eating a piece of food off the floor in the subway, like things on the subway that like you don't, you know, that are just gross. And she was feeling revolted by it. And I believe if I remember correctly, she closed her eyes and had this overwhelming feeling of waves and waves of love. And as she looked out on those on the subway, she saw them with the eyes of perfect love. Those feelings of disgust fell away. And it was like holy instance, you know, with these people, with just witnessing their radiance and their light rather than, you know, what had just been present, which were these feelings of disgust. Is anybody familiar with that story that could fill in any details or if I missed anything or got anything wrong?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. And I wasn't really listening to what you said though, but yeah, I think you got I was writing down Deidre's email and stuff. But yeah, it was a very interesting, like you said, she definitely thought they were smelly and whatnot. And then she was kneeling at God's knee and felt his hand press her shoulder. And then when she came back, she actually saw them all in light. Mm-hmm. And when she opened her eyes, I remember that. And then they eventually faded back and stuff. But she, for a while there, she still had that feeling of, wow, these are all my brothers and sisters and they're all perfect. And it was amazing. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be an awesome feeling to walk around with?
Oh, God. Oh. Just to even have that experience would be a wonderful feeling. Totally. I'm always like, I want a near death, but not death, or near life experience.
Near life, I like that. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, Andrea, for bringing that up. I forgot to go back there. Oh, are we all feeling complete? Does anybody have anything you want to share or any questions before we call it quits for the evening? In years past, we have done some, Christmas is still 5 days away. And in years past, it just didn't feel right. It felt right to stick with our cameo tonight. Remember that, you know, there's a lot of references. I shouldn't say a lot. There's sections in the course that reference Christmas. You can easily look up those sections online. If anybody doesn't have one of the searchable Course in Miracles links, you can just Google it, like ACIM lookup or something like that. And there's ways that you can put just the word Christmas in and it'll show you where it shows up. If you have the Kindle version of the CE, that's a way to find that. But that could be something fun to do in the next few days, you know, if you feel moved to read about Christmas. There is a quote, somebody shared it. Let me just see if I can bring it up really quick. It's on my Facebook wall. It was a meme that I had made a number of years ago in the shape of a Christmas tree. And it says, it's a quote from the course. It says, I'm hoping my computer's gonna speed up because the little wheel's still turning. It's right on my profile. Come on, here we go. The quote is, and I will leave you with this. This Christmas, give the Holy Spirit everything that would hurt you. Let yourself be healed completely that you may join with him in healing. And let us celebrate our release together by releasing everyone with us. So again, this Christmas, give the Holy Spirit everything that would hurt you. Let yourself be healed completely that you may join with him in healing. And let us celebrate our release together by releasing everyone with us. So I will leave you with that Christmas quote, and I hope everybody has a beautiful holiday and know that minds are joined. We're with you. I'm with you. We're all in this together, and Merry Christmas. And I will see you all, I guess, before the new year. So we'll have another little holiday to recognize.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Bye, everyone. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah, too. Love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.